Hello, folks. This is Peggy Garvey McMahon, your volunteer reader for Sun Sounds, and I have Time Magazine for you today. This is week one of the biweekly issue, so I'll be reading the cover stories and feature stories, and our first one is about Elon Musk, and the title is The Kingmaker. This is by Simon Schuster. Hang on a minute. Whom did we just elect? The Republican ticket had two names at the top, Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. But parts of the delirious November created the impression that someone else has taken hold of our collective destiny. We already knew him in various roles. The guy who bought Twitter and fired more than half its staff. The inventor who brought the space program back to life, and the car maker whose new trucks make kids stop and stare on the sidewalks. All of a sudden, Elon Musk has moved into the realm of politics, headlining rallies, steering government appointments, shaping agendas for the next president of the United States. For more than 3 years, he's been one of the world's richest and most powerful men. Markets saw and tumble on his tweets. Astronauts fly in his spaceships. Armies advance with the signals from his satellites. Conspiracy theories go mainstream through his embrace. But it was only in the spotlight of these elections that the full extent of his influence came into view. Not since the age of William Randolph Hearst, the newspaper magnate who greased FDR's ascent nearly a century ago, has a private citizen loomed so large over so many facets of American life at once, pulling the nation's culture, its media, its economy, and now its politics into the force field of his will. Standing beside him, even Trump can seem almost in awe, less a boss than a companion to the man for whom this planet and its challenges are not big enough. For now, they act like partners, bonded through the favors that they are trading and their shared desire to disrupt the institutions of government. They may deliver commands with one voice for a while, but their agendas do not align on everything. Both are willful, impulsive, and accustomed to being in charge. What will happen if they start to clash? In that kind of fight, Musk may not have the upper hand. History is strewn with the wreckage of kingmakers who went to war against the leaders they installed. No matter how much wealth or influence Musk collects, the tools of state power will remain with the president, and things will get messy if he decides to use them against the billionaire who helped him return to the White House. In the end, the durability of their partnership may depend on Musk's motives. What drove him to become a MAGA prophet in the first place? If it was money he wanted, then mission accomplished. The value of his fortune surged by more than $50 billion in the week after the election, peaking at more than $320 billion as investors went berserk for shares of Tesla. But wealth has never been Musk's obsession. The way that he has bet his fortune on moony passion projects like putting a greenhouse on Mars should be proof enough that he dreams differently from the average King Klingon aboard Starship Trump. People close to Musk say his ultimate goal has not changed since he launched SpaceX, his rocket company, in 2002. Among its investors are Mark and Lynn Benoff, the owners of Time. For more than two decades, Musk's white whale has been the red planet. It is written right there on his favorite t-shirt, Occupy Mars. Everything goes to that mission, says a member of Musk's social circle, who recently asked him about his plans. he's just realizing that being in control, directly or indirectly, of U.S. government budgets is going to put us on Mars in his lifetime. Doing it privately would be slower. That does not mean that U.S. taxpayers would foot the bill for Musk's dream of interplanetary travel. But the public does tend to pay a price when eccentric visionaries take the reins of government. Millions of Americans, from retired factory workers to debt-laden graduates and newborn children, benefit from the social programs that Musk has promised to slash. Though he fires off multiple tweets a day in his 205 million followers, Musk has declined to answer questions from reporters, including this one, since he became consigliere to the president-elect. He has not explained his reported contacts with American adversaries, from China and Russia to Iran. Nor has he addressed the conflicts of interest that arise from playing a key role in a government whose regulators investigate his businesses. So far, Trump seems happy to play along. In the middle of his victory speech on November 6th, he spent 4 minutes praising Musk, the super genius who helped him run his ground game in Pennsylvania, reportedly paying canvassers to knock on 11 million doors and hiring vans to bring Amish people to the polls. "We have a new star," Trump crowed from the stage in Florida. "A star is born, Elon." Only later, roughly 19 minutes into his speech, did the president-elect turn back to his teleprompter and remember to thank his voters. What Musk meant to the Trump campaign went far beyond the $120 million he pumped into it. The field program that he established, or the social media boost that he provided. To many of the young men who flocked to Trump in record numbers, Musk was an ideal avatar. He injected a sense of ingenuity and possibility into a familiar, nostalgic act. If Trump thrills supporters by pledging to destroy corrupt institutions, Musk represents the promise of building new things and solving hard problems. Trump did not seem so old at his rallies, with this Diablo playing edgelord bouncing around beside him. And it became harder for Trump's opponents to paint his team as a gaggle of halfwits when the greatest innovator of our time, with a record of delivering on outlandish plans, was pledging to slash spending by $2 trillion. No matter how often the Democrats reminded us that Trump's fortune grew out of inherited wealth, multiple bankruptcies, and decades of corporate shenanigans, they could not deny Musk's achievements as a businessman. Even Senator Bernie Sanders, scourge of the billionaire class, hedged his criticism in a recent podcast. "Elon Musk is a very, very aggressive and capable business person. Very impressive with what he's accomplished," he says. "I could do more in a week than the government can do in, 5 years, and in some ways, he is right." At a time when faith in government has cratered, that's all that many voters want to see: a capable outsider, ruthless and independent, who knows how to take a gargantuan machine and make it leaner, faster, and more productive. Musk's promise to do that with the American bureaucracy has already created momentum and cover for cutting costs on a scale that Washington has not seen in many years. That agenda did not get far during Trump's first presidential term. Millions of people depend on government jobs and on the protection that regulators provide from predatory businesses like those that gave us opioid abuse and cigarettes as a cure for asthma. But small government Republicans will be eager to follow Musk into the ugly budget battles over federal waste and bloated entitlements. Many Americans will be rooting for them. On the campaign trail, the most convincing argument that Musk offered was not on Joe Rogan's show or on stage at Trump's rallies. It was on the launch pad in Boca Chica, Texas, where Musk's aerospace company dazzled the world by catching a government rocket with a pair of robotic arms. If the man who did this supports Trump in such fervor, could Trump accomplish even some of the things that he promised? A lot of voters seem to think so, especially young men that Musk targeted for Trump with his bravado. The biggest factor here is that men need to vote, Musk told Rogan on the eve of the election. The next day, when 60% of white men turned out for Trump, Musk tweeted, "The cavalry has arrived." But his appeal reached well beyond the manosphere. It also moved to a swath of voters who were put off by Trump's character, but excited by his policies. TV pundits and these people needed a permission structure, and Musk provided just that to suburban women like Betsy Stez. As she stood in line for his October rally in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Stez described a sense of relief. "You have people finally feeling like, okay, I can hold my head up and say, I'm not ashamed to vote for Donald Trump." The reason, in her view, was Musk. Given his role in the victory, Musk may have expected some reward, but his perch in Trump's transition has reportedly unnerved some members of their entourage. For much of November, Musk camped out at Mar-a-Lago, weighing in on cabinet picks and advising Trump on policy priorities. He went golfing with the president-elect, sat ringside with him at an Ultimate Fighting Championship event, and took pictures with the Trump family. One grandkid raved on social media that Musk had attained uncle status. Musk coined a different term for his position, first buddy. Even that was an understatement. The leaders of Turkey and Ukraine had Musk listening in on their calls with Trump. An envoy from Iran, which stands accused of trying to assassinate Trump, reportedly met with Musk to talk about diffusing tensions. Iran's foreign ministry has denied the meeting. When House Republicans invited Trump to a closed-door session on Capitol Hill, Musk tagged along. The window of his car in Trump's motorcade labeled "Guest." By that point, Trump had appointed him to lead a new entity called the Department of Government Efficiency. Its acronym, DOGE, was a nod to the canine-themed cryptocurrency that Musk had promoted as a kind of joke. But its mandate was serious. Trump claimed that it would dismantle the federal bureaucracy and restructure its agencies. "I will send shockwaves through the system," Musk said. It could also give Musk influence over the many agencies that regulate his work. A few weeks before Election Day, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration announced it's investigating Tesla's self-driving vehicles after reported crashes. In June, regulators in California ordered Tesla to correct ongoing air quality violations alleged at its Fremont plant. Tesla said that its cars are safe and its facilities comply with environmental standards. SpaceX has also had run-ins with the Federal Aviation Administration, which Musk threatened to sue for overreach in September. A review by the New York Times found that his companies are facing at least 20 regulatory battles and investigations from, quote, all corners of the government, end quote. Musk and multiple representatives declined to comment or to respond to Times questions for this article, including about potential conflicts of interest. He has yet to explain what principles would guide his purge of the bureaucracy. The co-director of DOGE, Vivek Ramaswamy, ran on a pro-business libertarian platform in the past. Musk's politics, by comparison, are harder to pin down. This summer, he referred to himself as historically a moderate Democrat. He has called climate change the defining challenge of our age. When Barack Obama ran for president in 2008, Musk stood in line for 6 hours to shake his hand. His relationship with Trump has often been rocky. Their views on tariffs are far apart, and Musk lasted less than 6 months as an advisor to the White House in 2017 before quitting in protest over Trump's climate policies. 5 years later, Musk said it was time for Trump to sail into the sunset, eliciting a furious response. Elon should focus on getting himself out of the Twitter mess, Trump said, because he could owe $44 billion for something that's perhaps worthless. Trump had a point. Musk's purchase of Twitter made little of evident business sense. He paid at least double the company's value in 2022, then spent weeks dynamiting its revenue streams and cashiering its talent. The company's headcount, he has said, fell from 8,000 to around 1,500 under his leadership. Some of his posts on the platform, which he rebranded as X, came off as spasms of corporate self-harm. One referred to an anti-Semitic theory as the actual truth. He later apologized. Another shared a conspiracy theory about the Hammer attack that put House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband in the hospital with a fractured skull. Dozens of companies, including Microsoft and Coca-Cola, pulled their ads from the platform in response. "Don't advertise," he told them last fall from the stage of a conference. "If somebody is going to try to blackmail me with advertising, blackmail me with money. Go F yourself. Go F yourself. Is that clear?" The investment firm Fidelity assessed in October that X had lost nearly 80% of its value in the past 2 years. Musk didn't seem to care. Even without most of its workforce, the platform continued to function, routinely topping the list of the most downloaded news apps in the Apple App Store. Major advertisers have returned. For some observers, all this has been reason enough to applaud Musk's takeover as a masterclass in corporate efficiency. What Elon did with Twitter is he got inside, cleaned house, and now it's working better, says the members of Musk's social circle. So the mood is that hopefully Musk can do the same thing with the United States government. That's a tall order. Even fiscal hawks have balked at Musk's promise to eliminate $3 trillion in federal spending. It would require taking an axe to Medicare, Social Security, and other parts of the social safety net. Musk warned the nation to prepare for a period of temporary hardship as these cuts take effect. But it's far from clear that he will even have the power to make them. DOGE will remain outside of government with no authority to fire federal employees. Many budgetary experts expect it to go the same way as countless blue ribbon panels that tried and failed to pressure politicians to cut the programs that their constituents love. In identifying waste, fraud, and abuse, the U.S. Congress needs no help. It already has an oversight branch called the Government Accountability Office, which assiduously tries to do that job. For many fans of DOGE, they say that they recognize the limits of its potential and celebrate all the same. Yes, a Department of Government Efficiency is probably a pipe dream and might end up as essential as Monty Python's Department of Silly Walks, the Wall Street Journal columnist Andy Kessler wrote on November 17th. But even if Mr. Musk's doge is simply to trim some bloat and save us a few hundred billion, it'll be worth it. On the campaign trail, Musk talked a lot about the need for the U.S. to live honestly and within its means. But if his social media platform is any guide, his aims may have less to do with efficiency than ideology. His stated goal in acquiring Twitter matches one of his favorite reasons for supporting Trump. He says he wants to salvage free speech in America. Freedom of speech is the bedrock of democracy, he told Joe Rogan on the eve of the election. Once you lose freedom of speech, you lose democracy. Game over. That's why I bought Twitter. Multiple reports and studies concluded that under his stewardship, the platform has become a refuge for hateful and harmful content, in part because he fired the content moderation team. Asked to explain his shift to the right, Musk often brings up the woke mind virus, his term for the leftward shift in American society that, in his view, gave rise to identity politics, cancel culture, and supposedly rampant online censorship. His grudge against these forces is not merely political. During the pandemic, one of his children sought gender-affirming medical care, and Musk has said that he was tricked into approving it. His transgender daughter, who is now 20 years old and estranged from her father, legally changed her name in 2022 to Vivian Jenna Wilson. On a podcast in July, Musk said that his child is dead, killed by the woke mind virus. I vowed to destroy the woke mind virus after that. Wilson posted her response the next day. I look pretty good for a dead bitch. On November 5th, as the result of the elections became clear, Wilson published another message. Blame the effing politicians and oligarchs who caused this to happen, she wrote. Direct your anger toward them. In ancient Greek, the word oligarchia meant ruled by the few. Its earliest critic was Aristotle in the 4th century BCE. The philosopher described it as a state of affairs in which men of property have the government in their hands. In medieval Venice, the leader of the oligarchy ruled for life, and he went by the same title that Musk gave to his new department, the Doge. The purest expression of this system in modern times took shape in Russia in the 1990s, when a few businessmen bought up control of the national economy during its chaotic transition to capitalism. The Russian term for their oligarchy is Semithankachina, the reign of the seven bankers. The most powerful among them, Boris Berezovsky, used his media assets to help Vladimir Putin win his first election in 2000, and he expected the new president to share the spoils of power. Instead, the two of them began to feud. Soon, the Russian state forced Berezovsky into exile and seized his television network. Broke and lonely, the oligarch died in 2013 at his mansion in the English countryside. Authorities ruled it a suicide, and to this day, his former media channel carries the Kremlin's message. One of Berezovsky's close associates, Alec Goldfarb, now lives in New Jersey, and he has followed the tandem of Musk and Trump with a mix of familiarity and dread. There seems to be an oligarchy forming here as well, he says. Under Putin, in the early years, we had the oligarchs fighting the state with everything they had, says Goldfarb. Here it seems we have two oligarchs, Musk and Trump, working together to take over the state. The outcome may depend on the way that this new duo treats the institutions that they will soon control. If the aim is to sharpen them into leaner and more effective tools of government, the public could benefit from the remaking of a system that has long been weighted down with bureaucratic flab. But Trump has also used those tools the way that Putin has done in Russia, to benefit his friends and sideline his enemies. Musk has a lot to gain from that arrangement. As long as he sticks to the role of first buddy, he might expect an easy ride from the regulators that Trump appoints throughout the government. His clearest path to Mars could run straight through the Oval Office. But apart from watching the spectacle of his success, what benefit will trickle down to everyday Americans? The institutions that give us health care, keep our water clean, and educate our kids are not meant to be run like businesses. They are not built to make a profit, but that does not make them any less valuable, especially for the citizens who can at least afford to pay. If those institutions get culled amid the Muskian push for efficiency, the hardship will not be temporary for those who rely on government support. For them, the pain could be devastating, and none of Musk's promises of an interplanetary future will help them get through the problems of today. Folks, you're listening to Sun Sounds, and we're going to continue now with the feature stories from this week's Time magazine, and our next one is Shopping Under the Influence. This is by Eliana Dockerman. Two women clad in sheer, pearl-dotted bodysuits with a giant white roses strapped to their heads greet guests entering a Fashion Week party at Hotel Foucault's in New York City. A sign outside the room notes that the capacity is 74 people, but more than 200 guests have RSVP'd. The noise is deafening, though that matters little under the point of this party, which is to photograph and be photographed. One woman wears a leopard print mini dress with a matching coat, another a blazer with no shirt underneath. Several women fix their makeup in the mirror cocktail table scattered around the room. Even the DJ pauses to take a selfie. Many of the attendees have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of followers on social media. But the star of the night is Amber Venz Box, the host of the event and president and co-founder of LTK, one of the most popular influencer platforms in the world. Box, 36, usually keeps a relatively low profile. She lives on a ranch in Texas with her co-founder, CEO, and husband, Baxter Box, and their four kids in a location that she won't disclose for privacy reasons. But in this room, influencers clamor for a picture with the willowy redhead. Several call her their hero. One of the richest self-made women in the United States, with Forbes estimating her net worth at $315 million in 2021, she helped pioneer the modern influencer economy by building a bridge between content creators and advertising dollars. "We've come such a long way," she says in a welcome speech. Looking at the guest list for today, 10% of you in the room are LTK millionaires. Everyone swivels their head in search of these mystery super earners. A man next to me, clad entirely in black, whispers, "Damn, let me take off my sunglasses and take a look around." LTK has revolutionized the online shopping experience with what Box has described as a win-win model. The company allows influencers to post links to products that they're wearing, carrying, or decorating with on the LTK platform, which their followers can access via social media or the LTK app. If, for instance, an LTK creator posts a photo in a cute blazer on Instagram, One of her followers can click over the creator's LTK page to see where it came from and click from there to the brand site to buy it. The retailer makes the sale and pays a commission to the influencer and a transaction fee to LTK. The platform also offers creators information about their reach, their follower demographics, and the types of photos and videos that are attracting attention. The companies even connect influencers with brands looking for a specific type of person to promote a product, say, a furniture company seeking someone who appeals to 20-somethings, women decorating their first apartments. LTK takes a cut of those deals, too. Box boasts that more than 8,000 retailers are on LTK. 40 million people shop through LTK creators every month, and LTK has helped 419 influencers become millionaires. She estimates that the company, which raised $300 million from SoftBank at a $2 billion valuation in 2021, will generate about $5 billion in sales for the brands this year, much of which will come this holiday season. Last November, according to LTK, more than $200 worth of products were purchased every second through its creators. Influencers are giving traditional advertising a run for its money. Goldman Sachs predicts that the creator economy will approach $500 billion by 2027. But Box saw the potential more than a decade ago. During her speech at the soiree, she thanks everyone for flying in from all over the country. She lists some of the brands at Fashion Week that are on LTK: Provenza Shoulder, Ulla Johnson, Simkai, and emphasizes just how much the market has changed. Cheers to this community, and I hope that you guys have a wonderful, amazing Fashion Week, she says, because Lord knows these brands need you. Hours before the party, Box sits at her hotel room fretting over what to wear. The choice is important, not only because of who will see her, but that night, also because LTK's 4.4 million Instagram followers will be able to look her up and watch her ensemble and purchase it through the LTK app. She ultimately decides on a $2,065 blush-colored Costarellos gown accessorized with a black handbag and pearl and diamond earrings. Growing up in Texas, Box was an introverted kid who came to see fashion as a tool for attention. Her aunt, an artist, would paint her shoes for school. Box got kicked out of fifth grade math class for knitting scarves that she would sell to her friends. In high school, she started making wire earrings, knockoffs of the gold ones she'd seen Jessica Simpson wear on Newlyweds. It wasn't long before fellow teens were dropping off their prom dresses at her home so she could make jewelry to match their look. Box launched her jewelry line in high school and later sold it at the local store where she worked in college. "I thought that I was going to be the next Rachel Zoe," she says, referring to the celebrity stylist who had her own reality show. She spent a summer living in a frat house in L.A. while interning for photographers and stylists. The next summer, she shared a mattress on the floor with a friend in an apartment in New York City and worked as an intern for the fashion brand Thakoon. "Anna Wintour was always popping in," Box remembers. "It was sort of the Devil Wears Prada in real life, where they made us hide. Like, Anna couldn't see anyone but Thakoon Patchkol when she came in, and they wouldn't give us warning. It was a really open space, so you'd have to slouch down behind a wall." Patchkol did not respond to the request for comment. When Box returned to Southern Methodist University for her senior year, she met her now husband, Baxter, who had started a tech incubator. One day, he looked at her spreadsheets and realized that her jewelry sales dwarfed what she was making as a sales clerk. He was like, "Oh my God, where is this money?" And I was like, "You're looking at it," gesturing to her clothes and shoes. Baxter encouraged her to commit to the jewelry line full-time, and she made a deal with his incubator to support the business. Still living in her father's house, she shipped her wares to department stores in New York and set up stands in local markets. My stuff was like really avant-garde. And at this market, I was next to glitter makeup bags, she says. I was sort of being snooty and a little offended about my positioning there. But then, the first day, I sold $8,000 of jewelry, and they sold $400,000 of the sparkle bags. She went home to complain to her father. He was like, "Amber, sell to the masses." She didn't have time to implement the lesson. It was 2008, and when the economy took a turn, the business began to collapse. She worked as a personal stylist and made a decent living until she launched a fashion blog in 2010. The blog was featured in the Dallas Morning News and took off. But then her clients started enthusiastically buying the clothes that she featured in her posts without paying her for the advice. Dismayed, she went to a conference for fashion bloggers in New York on a mission to figure out how to monetize the blog. I remember Leandra Mendine Cohen from Man Repeller was on stage, and so I ran and grabbed her afterwards, and I was like, "Hey, so how do you make money doing this?" She was like, "Well, I don't." So literally no one's making money. Mendine Cohen declined to comment, but a source close to her says that the Man Repeller founder does not believe that she would have ever characterized her business this way. Box had spent thousands of dollars on a laptop, a camera to photograph her in outfits, website domain, and a designer to build and maintain the site. Fashion blogging was sort of like rich girl sport, she says. She dreamed of making a commission on the clothes that she recommended on her blog, just as she had working with brick and mortar boutiques. And so the first iteration of LTK, called Reward Style, was born. She had $236 in her bank account the day that it launched. My home is a testament to the power of the influencer. I own a ridiculously efficient pepper grinder touted by several celebrity chefs, a Scandinavian rug hawked by a lifestyle blogger, and baby spoons recommended by a nutritionist turned mom influencer. And that's before I even reach my closet. If you are active on social media, particularly Instagram or TikTok, you can also probably pinpoint the people online who inspired you to buy certain items. But Box spent years trying to convince Silicon Valley that influencers were the future of commerce. In 2010, Box convinced Shopop, which had been acquired by Amazon, that influencers might drive traffic to the online retailer. Mendine Cohen and other fashion bloggers came on board. We went to San Francisco, did this whole tour, and everyone was like, "I'm going to call my girlfriends and see what she thinks about this." The idea of monetizing fashion blogs, it wasn't really clicking for them, Box says. And then one of the places that we went into, the secretary dialed in and was like, "Baxter Box is here," and he brought his wife. Looking back, Box said being overshadowed and wed to a man isn't the only reason that it was difficult to launch a company with her romantic partner. Even before they were co-founders, when his incubator had a deal with her jewelry company, she felt a sense of inequity. "I still think the structure that was initially created was not appropriate," Box says. There was friction when he was getting paid and I wasn't. And I was like, this doesn't make sense. I'm the one slaving away and you're getting the check every month. Frustrations compounded when they both decided to work full-time on LTK in the same room. I would get calls and he would be G-chatting me like, why didn't you say this? You should have said that. Box eventually decamped to the bathroom to take her meetings. Those were awful years, she says. We did break up several times. We never told anyone at the company, and we never behaved differently because we didn't want any of the company to think, oh no, what's going to happen? The founders broke up. The boxes did eventually figure out how to work together. They operate out of separate buildings on their ranch and meet with each other in the car on the way to pick up their kids. And the rest of the world did eventually catch up to Box's vision. Companies slowly realized that potential customers were more likely to buy a product from an influencer whose taste they already trusted than from an ad put in front of them by an algorithm. A 2022 Pew Research Center study found that 30% of adult social media users had purchased something after seeing an influencer post about it, a number that jumped to 53% for those who follow creators' accounts. Influencers offer a huge benefit to brands moving into spaces with customer bases who are unfamiliar with them, says Jared Watson, a professor of marketing at NYU, who specializes in the influencer economy. And then there are the parasocial or one-way relationships that followers form with influencers they love. It feels like it's a request from a friend or family member to check out this product, and they feel like they're not going to be led astray, Watson says. In 2013, the boxes launched Like to Know, a new platform with focus on driving sales from social media. Consumers bought $10 million worth of products promoted by its creators in 2015, and they bought $50 million in 2016, and in 2017 they bought $150 million. Paradoxically, the success made Box nervous. She felt too dependent on the fickle practices of social media sites. This fear had manifested when Pinterest, without warning, turned off outside links one day in 2012. They turned Like to Know it back when the back boxes complained that it had an ongoing campaign ad using its links. So Box's team began to build the LTK app, launched in April of 2017, to cultivate a space that is less reliant on other social platforms. It saw a massive boom during the pandemic when creators suddenly had endless time to post everything from Target lamps to Chanel earrings, and shoppers had endless time to stare at their phones. The business grew so much that Box began to feel overstretched and in 2023 decided that she could no longer reside in a big city. "I am a pleaser," she says. "There is guilt with every no. It's really nice to say, sorry, I can't come to your birthday party or charity thing. I don't live in Dallas anymore." She was also concerned about how her social media presence was impacting her family. "In Dallas, especially, we are a recognized family, and it's uncomfortable to go into restaurants and other places because I know I'm just being watched all the time, and I know my kids are being watched in the same way because they've been part of the story online," she says. Which isn't to say that she stopped posting about them entirely. On a recent trip to New York City to celebrate her daughter Birdie's 9th birthday, Box chronicled the family's outfits for their various excursions with links to LTK. Watson of NYU says that LTK has turned into the tool of choice for influencers. Individual social media sites like TikTok have ways to shop within the app, but cannot offer creators data on engagement across other platforms. And competitors simply do not have as many brand relationships as LTK, which was seen early as the space. They electrically make it a really nice one-stop shop for creators, he says. And success begets success. One of the reasons that LTK is crushing it is because all influencers hear about it from one another, and all they hear about is LTK. If you're intrigued by the idea of becoming an LTK millionaire, know that it's not as simple as posting a few mirror selfies. The company now boasts more than 300,000 creators, but it remains selective. There's an application process which Box's team analyzes influencers' engagement on social media, their aesthetic, and whether their content is shoppable. Once accepted, creators participate in a boot camp on how to light their pictures, write captions, and create an editorial calendar. You also need credibility, Box says. For example, now that I'm living on a ranch, my wardrobe has changed entirely. I have a huge boot collection because there are snakes where I live. The company also recruits. It has targeted reality stars like Whitney Port from The Hills, who attended the Fashion Week party, and Daisy Kent from The Bachelor, who was one of 360 creators at the 12th annual LTK Con Summit in Dallas just 3 weeks later. Kind of gives me meaning outside of the platform of the reality show or whatever I'm doing, says Olivia Flowers, a Southern Charm alum. They teach me how I can promote my hit brand, which is me. Box likes to hold up Emily of the Netflix show Emily in Paris as a model influencer. Be Emily, and then also make what you're doing in your life shoppable, Box tells her creators. I point out that many people, even fans of the show, find Emily insufferable exactly because of her influencer tendencies, her wild fashion choices, her overly peppy demeanor, her insistence on taking photos of every aspect of her life. She's not for everyone, Box says, laughing, but Box does think that Emily could be successful on LTK. I would tell her to keep being positive and happy. I tell our creators that. Also, respond to followers. If they message you and say they bought the jeans, they want your acknowledgement and validation. They should respond. I hope you like them. What did you wear them with? I call being a creator the hospitality business. Jed Adams, an interior design guru with a $3.1 million Instagram followers, personifies this attitude. Walking out of the Fashion Week party, she is stopped every few steps by women that she has mentored. She hugs each new person and bounces with joy as she talks about the impact that Box has had on her life. The Nordstrom anniversary sale has always been a big event for creators. We call it Christmas in July, she says. One year, LTK reposted one of Adams's pictures the night before the sale. When that day's commission came in, I literally fell out of bed, she says. One of LTK's most successful creators, she now employs 15 people, all of whom she notes are moms, and all of whom are supported by her LTK affiliate link business, as is her own family. How much money does she make in LTK exactly? She won't say. Several other influencers I speak with are similarly circumspect. They are indeed millionaires, though, and they are in the minority when it comes to the overall creator economy. Of the estimated 50 million people earning money by promoting content, only about 4% earn more than $100,000 a year, according to a 2023 report from Goldman Sachs. And yet, the number entering the space is likely to keep growing. A Morning Consult poll last year found that 57% of Gen Z and 47% of adults overall would become an influencer if they had the opportunity. I asked how the company can maintain both its rate of growth and its air of exclusivity. Bach says that LTK is looking to broaden its reach overseas as well as expand its smaller verticals like wellness and cooking in the U.S. Kit Ulrich, LTK's general manager of the creator shopping platform, points to pickleball as an area of particular interest to sports brands looking to boost sales. Though Box sold another company that she co-founded, a platform that connected customers with nail technicians, to Glam Squad in 2023, she sidesteps questions of an LTK acquisition, saying only that she is always open to strategic opportunities, but is focused on future-proofing the business. She knows, after all, that others want in Instagram launched, Instagram shopping, so users can buy from the brands without leaving the app, and TikTok has TikTok Shop, though in November, TikTok began letting its users link to LTK in their posts. LTK introduced full-bleed scrollable videos a la TikTok this year and has been incorporating AI learning to connect brands with creators. Meanwhile, the company has not forgotten what happened with Pinterest and continues to urge creators to grow their following on its own app. Bach says that internal metrics show engagement on Instagram has been plummeting since the spring. Individual creators have less power and control about whether their community is going to see them at any given time, Ulrich says. When you run the risk of not being able to earn as much money, Instagram did not respond to multiple requests for comment. Maybe someday, Box will kick up her designer boots and retire to the luxury yurt vacation retreat that she and Baxter opened near Big Bend National Park in 2020. But if she learned anything from her early days trying to turn her passion into a livelihood, it's to recognize the challenges ahead, but not be cowed by them. She recalls going to the store that she worked at Dallas and telling them about the new business that she was launching. The owner was like, "No one's ever going to pay somebody for online sales. So when it doesn't work, you can have your job back." She's good. And folks, that does it for Time Magazine today. We're out of time, and I hope you've enjoyed hearing the cover story and the feature story from this week's issue. This is Peggy Garvey McMahon, your volunteer reader for SunSounds. And please remember that if you've missed any of this broadcast or any of our broadcasts, you can go to sunsounds.org, click on Broadcast Info and Audio, and listen to any of our programs on demand. I've enjoyed reading for you today, and I'll look forward to next time. Have a great week. Bye now.